Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, April 19th, 2016. Riek Machar's return to Juba is delayed again.
I saw him coming yesterday, but he did not come. Today also, I expected him to come today. He has not come. Then what do you expect me to know after this?
And more violence in Bor County.
Thorn Bor was attacked by a number of Murley raiders. They came and attacked the police at night. They went away with two children.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Riek Machar's return to Juba has been delayed once again. The SPLM-IO says the first vice president-designate's return was canceled because South Sudanese authorities did not grant permission for the chartered plane of the SPLM-IO chief of staff, Simon Gatwich, to fly over South Sudanese airspace. The government says it is disappointed that Machar postponed his return to Juba again, saying it will further delay forming the transitional government of national unity. Magume Davis-Wakarind reports for VOA from Juba.
I saw him coming yesterday, but he did not come. Today also, I expected him to come today. He has not come. Then what do you expect me to know after this? I don't know when he will be coming.
That is South Sudanese Information Minister, Michael Makwey, voicing his frustration over rebel leader Riek Machar's second cancellation of his return to Juba in as many days. Just like yesterday, tight security was visible around the capital as the country anticipated Machar's expected arrival. Hundreds of military personnel could be seen stationed along the roads leading to and from the airport and at main government installations. And once again, security operatives prevented motorists from driving near the airport. Many people did not report to work and students stayed home. Some shops remained closed. By the afternoon, though, it was clear Machar was not coming again. William Ezekiel is the SPLM IO Advance Team spokesman.
We are deeply sorry once again to announce cancellation of the arrival of His Excellency Dr. Riek Machar, the Indargun, first vice president, who is supposed to come today to Juba. He's not coming to Juba by today. For issue of related to logistics, one. Two, also, there is another demand that came up, that the flight of the plane of General, Chief of General Staff must obtain clearance to use South Sudan airspaces before it could fly.
Ezekiel says the South Sudan government demanded that before the SPLM-IO General Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Simon Gatwich Dole, fly over South Sudan airspace, the plane's pilot must first receive permission from South Sudan authorities. Ezekiel says the SPLM-IO office still has no knowledge as to when the clearance of Dole's plane will be granted by government authorities. According to the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a group of South Sudanese regional and international members responsible for monitoring the implementation of the peace agreement, Machar was supposed to arrive in Juba on April 12th. Makwey says Machar was planning to come with up to 200 to 500 additional soldiers beyond what was called for in the agreement and heavy weapons.
Today, the 19th April 2016, the government was informed that he wanted to come with an arsenal of arms in inter alia, anti-tanks, laser-guided missiles, and heavy machine guns. This is the information which we got this morning. The total number of the SPLM-IO forces, beside the police, to be in Juba as agreed by the parties in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, on the 3rd of November 2015, is 1,410 officers, NCOs, and men. 1,410, out of which, up to this moment, we have a force of 1,370.
The two sides continue to disagree on the cantonment areas in Equatoria and Bahal al-Ghazal areas, the number of troops in Juba, and President Salva Kiir's creation of the 28 states. Makwei says the government has abided by the agreement.
The government and the people of the Republic of South Sudan have been waiting for the arrival of the first vice president designate so that he comes in, he takes his oath, and thereafter submits the list of his nominees to the president so that the transitional government of national unity is established. But now with him deciding to call off his coming to Juba indefinitely, that will be up to the president and the government of South Sudan to decide on the way forward.
Tens of thousands of people have been killed in the more than 2 years conflict, and more than 2 million people have been displaced, according to the United Nations. Aid agencies have also warned of looming famine unless the fighting ends so people can return their farms and plant crops. Makwei says the two sides must figure out how to trust each other so they can move forward and form the transitional government. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Waki Simon Mudu in Juba contributed to this report. Many South Sudanese felt strong emotion surrounding news of yet another delay in Riek Machar's return to Juba. Michael Atit spoke to a few of them in WOW.
I have really lost hope. All of the South Sudanese were expecting, have high expectation of his arrival, that if he arrives or if he comes back home, things may change to a better situation. Like this is the first South Sudanese that if he comes back, then economical crisis may reduce. But now, he's now 2 days. He promised to come since yesterday, and today, I personally really lose hope.
According to me, he's leaving us with no hope, and he's also making us actually not to have confidence in the arrangement for his coming. So we feel very bad, and we feel very disappointed in regard to his preparations. As per now, even as I talked, I even don't have any heart even to hear any news about his coming.
We were hoping if he arrives in South Sudan, everything will be okay. The suffering which the citizen of South Sudan suffering, I think if he was arrive in South Sudan, everything will be changed in terms of good and even in terms of road also, because there is a lot of problem on the road. So we were affected. If he arrive in South Sudan, things they will change.
I am not happy because every day they make promises tomorrow, and it doesn't come. I mean, we want to see what he has in store for the nation. What is his agenda when he comes on power? We want to see all these things happening. But when he keep on postponing, then we also keep on losing hope.
Those were a few South Sudanese reacting to Riek Machar's cancelled arrival in Juba for a second day. Three people were killed and scores of others were injured when gunmen suspected of being from the Greater Pabor area tried to abduct children and livestock in Jungla State's Bor County Monday night. Officials say there have been several similar attacks in the area in recent weeks. Jacob Achek has the story for VOA from Bor.
Local leaders in Ton Bor village says the suspected raiders attacked residents near Bor Public Primary School in Ton Bor village, about 2.5 kilometers from the Jonglei State Secretariat in the middle of the night. Bor County's Commissioner Isaac Mameruk says he believes the suspected cattle raiders came from Pibor. Rook says the attackers also tried to abduct some children who were later rescued by area youths.
Ton Bor was attacked by a number of Murulay raiders. They came and attacked the village at night. They went away with two children, and they killed the uncle of those two children. Good enough, the youth also managed to lay a long, long ambush with the SPLA. When they were trying to cross the road to the eastern side of Juba Bor Road, they pulled into ambush of our youth and SPLA. Two of them were killed on the side of the rebels, and one person was killed on our side, and two children were returned from the end of the raiders.
Rook says 3 days ago, another group of gunmen, also suspected of being cattle raiders from the Greater Pibor area, attacked Jale Payam, injuring 4 people and stealing dozens of goats. On the same day, Rook says gunmen attempted to abduct a child in the area, but residents managed to recover the stolen livestock and rescue the abducted child. Botown resident Aluel Will Ajoy, who says she witnessed the Monday night attack, says she saw three armed men. She blamed local government officials for failing to provide adequate security in urban centers.
Killing of innocent people, then taking someone's children. It is so painful because someone give birth to his or her children, but someone come to take them and kill the people. So it's really not that good.
Police Inspector Colonel Ajang John Jok, who is in charge of town security, called on state youth to take security of their own area by searching for criminals outside their homes.
We police, we don't have equipment. Sometimes people are working on footing, but we are cooperating with the communities. When there is any accident, they can inform us and those of armed forces. What they have done last night is very good. Then we do appreciate what they have done.
Jonglei government and traditional chief held a peace conference last week to discuss how communities in the state can peacefully coexist side by side with the neighboring Murule, Nuer, and Mundare communities. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
The UN Refugee Agency reports new fighting and severe food shortages in previously peaceful areas of South Sudan are causing thousands of people to flee into neighboring countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The report calls the scale and type of sexual violence committed primarily by government SPLA and allied militias one of the most horrendous human rights situations in the world. During the period of the report from April to September 2015, the UN recorded 1,300 reported rapes in oil-rich Unity State alone. The report says sexual assaults are carried out with extreme brutality. It finds girls and women of all ages are subjected to multiple gang rapes. Some are then killed, while others are abducted and held in sexual slavery as so-called wives for soldiers in barracks. UN Human Rights spokesman Rupert Colville tells VOA that youth militia allied to the government are being allowed to rape women in lieu of wages.
It seems they're not being paid. They're just being given carte blanche to rape and to steal cattle. And then basically those are the two sort of bits of war bounty they get, to the women and the cattle. It's really an unbelievable picture, and then nothing being done apparently by the government to stop it.
Colville says the government received the report 1 week ago and has more or less denied some of the worst allegations. He says the prevalence of rape and the deliberate and systematic way in which it is being carried out indicates that rape is being used as a weapon of war and as a means of terrorizing the civilian population. That policy seems to be working, he says, as more than 2 million people have been forcibly displaced from their homes since South Sudan's civil war began in December 2013. He says government forces and the militias have been systematically destroying the towns and villages abandoned by the people across southern and central Unity State.
Massive destruction when one group captures another group's town, destroy three-quarters sometimes or more of the buildings. And, what appears to be a sort of concerted effort to employ a scorched earth policy so they don't come back.
Colville says these horrific violations could likely amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity, given how widespread and systematic they are. He warns the deliberate targeting of civilians for killing, rape, and pillage will continue until people are held accountable and punished for the crimes they commit. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. More deadly fighting in Darfur. We'll have that story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what does your country need to do to to be great.
I think my country needs to develop the sense of accountability, because in my country, people do things and they're not held accountable for their deeds, and no one even asks why.
We need to invest heavily into agriculture and processing of raw materials. That way, we will develop faster.
I think my country personally has the potential to reach great heights by embarking on their major sources of income like tourism, agriculture, and the great mining industry that we have. As we all know, Zambia is the largest producer of copper in Africa. And if they were to put up policies, Zambia would be a great country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about the shortfalls in healthcare funding. Global healthcare economists say funding for healthcare services around the world is getting harder and harder to find. The lack of funding is a real threat for people around the world struggling with some of the world's most deadly health issues. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
People wasting away from AIDS or succumbing to malaria may become an increasingly common sight within the next 25 years, as funding for universal health care shrivels up. That bleak assessment is suggested in two new reports by Joseph Dielman, an economist at the Institute for Medical Metrics and Evaluation in Seattle, Washington, published in the journal The Lancet. Experts say poor countries are not keeping up funding necessary for universal health care at the same time that international aid continues to stagnate. Currently, donor governments and organizations provide $36 billion a year on health care, according to Dielman, an amount that's continuing to grow but not keeping up to meet health care demand. The same is true with spending by low-income countries themselves, which is rising by 4%.
But reality is the spending is already so low that that 4% growth, while it's an increase and it means more resources for health, especially in the low-income settings, it still means a significant gap.
The researchers used previous research that estimated the cost of health care per person in low-income countries would be about $86 per person. Dielman says the poorest countries may fall short of the $86 per person in health care spending projected to be required for essential services in 2040. The crisis could affect 35 low- and moderate-income countries, most of them in sub-Saharan Africa, that carry the greatest burden of disease. An analysis of 184 countries by Dielman and colleagues found that 15 million people who are taking antiretroviral therapy for HIV/AIDS could be impacted by a shortfall in healthcare dollars. For example, Dielman says funding for HIV treatment went up substantially between 2000 and 2009 by 24% yearly.
So remarkable growth, but more recently that 24% annualized growth rate has shrunk down to 1%. So a drastic reduction in the amount of resource and how much is growing.
According to research estimates, the average healthcare spending per person will range from $164 in low-income countries to more than $9,000 in wealthier nations. Annual healthcare spending is projected to be the highest in the U.S. at more than $16,000 per person. In 25 years, the least amount of healthcare money could be available in Somalia at only $34 per capita. One solution, according to experts, is for countries to increase tax collection on wealthier citizens and give a lower priority to programs like fuel subsidies. An assessment of future public health spending was presented this week at a World Bank meeting on universal health care. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
The Ethiopian government has declared 2 days of national mourning for the victims of the attacks and abductions in Gambela carried out by South Sudanese armed elements. The Ethiopian Broadcasting Corporation reports that Ethiopian flags at all embassies will be flown at half-mast to remember those who died in the attacks. South Sudanese Foreign Affairs spokesman Mawin Makola-Areg confirms that they are working with Ethiopia to carry out a joint military operation to reclaim the children and prevent further attacks.
So what we need here is the cooperation between the two governments. So on our side of South Sudan, where the Morley might have gone from to go and attack people, we can also work with the Ethiopian government to try to identify the children that have been attacked and also try to prevent this kind of attack to happen next time.
Reports say the Ethiopian government is in a cross-border mission to rescue the 108 women and children who were abducted in Friday's attack in the Gambela region of Ethiopia. The gunmen reportedly returned to South Sudan with the dozens of abducted children and an unknown number of stolen cattle. Cross-border raids have occurred in the past, as the area is awash with weapons that share borders with Ethiopia. It is unclear if Ethiopian troops have crossed into South Sudan to pursue the attackers. An Ethiopian government spokesman said his government has been in touch with Juba about operations to pursue the perpetrators of Friday's attacks. A state official in East Darfur says calm has returned to the state after a wave of tribal violence that swept across the capital city of Aldeyan yesterday when Razigat militiamen attacked the house of the state governor and set it on fire. This latest episode of violence between the Razigat and Malai tribes came a few days before announcing the results of the Darfur administrative referendum. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Khartoum.
The incident was sparked when Maaliya militiamen allegedly attacked a convoy of Razigat men in South Darfur. Local leaders say more than a dozen people were killed on both sides in the ensuing violence. The Razigat tribesmen then accused East Darfur Governor Anas Umar, who is from the Maaliya tribe, of orchestrating the attack. Al-Hadi Burma is the government spokesman in East Darfur. Speaking in Arabic, Burma says the incident in South Darfur led some people to think the government had something to do with it. So he says they attacked the house of the governor at around 7 p.m. last night. Burma says the Razigat militiamen fired shots at Governor Umar's house in Aldeyan and killed three security guards. The resulting exchange of fire torched the house. He says the assailants were eventually repelled and were forced to flee the area. Burma says things are now calm and stable throughout the state. He says security forces are in full control, especially in the capital city of Aldeyan. Burma adds that the main market and the banks are all open. The two Arab tribes, the Razigat and Maaliya, are both pastoralists who live side by side in East Darfur, with the Razigat tribesmen concentrated in the capital city, Aldeyan, and Maaliya tribesmen in Adila. Tensions and violent conflict over land ownership and cattle rustling between the two groups have raged on for decades and resulted in the death and displacement of thousands of people. Burma says the state government has worked to resolve the situation. Burma says the state has carried out a number of efforts with the help of the President of the Republic of Sudan and the armed forces and the police to prevent conflict. He says they have made almost a complete segregation between the two tribes to prevent contact and tension. The Marawi Peace Agreement, signed in 2015, aimed to resolve the disputes between the two tribes, and though it has reduced the conflict, it hasn't ended it. Observers say the problem has its roots in the fact that both Arab tribes are heavily armed because the government of Sudan recruited them as part of its counterinsurgency campaign to fight African rebels who took up arms against the government in 2003. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Meanwhile, a demonstration and a hunger strike was held by Darfurians in the diaspora outside of the White House as part of a global week of action against genocide in Darfur. VOA fellow Nadia Taha has more from Washington.
No genocide in Darfur!
No more war in Darfur!
No more war in Darfur!
About 100 Darfurian protests in front of the White House.
over the weekend, demanding that more action be taken to stop the war in Darfur. Nimat Ahmadai is the founder and a chief of Darfur Women's Action Group. Ahmadai says millions of people have been displaced because of the ongoing violence in Jabal Marra and other areas of Darfur. Ahmadai says she organized the hunger strike and the protest because people are dying and the White House is doing nothing about it.
We demanded that the Obama administration speak up and send his special envoy to Sudan, to Darfur, to assess the situation because the people are dying and they are not receiving humanitarian aid assistance. And that is why we want the world leaders, particularly the United States government, to speak up about the recent attacks in Darfur and to denounce it and hold the government of Sudan accountable.
The Darfur genocide refers to the mass slaughtering of men, women, and children, and raping the Darfurian women in Western Sudan. The killing began in 2003 and continues today. The genocide is being carried out by a group of Arab militia allegedly founded by the government, who are known as the Janjaweed. The Janjaweed are accused of burning Darfurian villages, looting cattle and property, polluting water source. The Khartoum government is denying the finding of the Janjaweed. Ahmadai says President Barack Obama must do more to help the people of Darfur during his final months in the office.
We have hoped that Obama administration will be more forceful coming into doing something to end the genocide, but they are instead they are witnessing the genocide in Darfur and they are looking the other way. But I think Obama has the opportunity to do something. Please do something and leave history for the people of Darfur.
Ahmadai says the Darfurian diaspora in the United States is uniting with Sudanese in Europe, Canada, Africa, and Australia. They are trying to draw the world's attention to what she is saying atrocities being committed by the Sudanese government. They are also meeting with U.S. Congress members in this week. They are also holding workshop here in Washington to educate lawmakers, academics, and other about Darfur. For VOA News, I'm Nadia Taha in Washington.
South Sudan in Focus has contacted the White House for comment. We have not heard back from White House officials. And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Sudan by Lomareka.
Sudani number one, the Africa. Mwakani nita Sudani, ketire. Gapaye ta Sudani, say ketire. Nina pulu akwal, ekwal. Nina pulu nasiwa ide. Nina pulu akwal, ekwal. Lakini dom dom waide de kulu fi Sudani ya kwana. Sudani belet kepi fi Afrika e. Sudani number one fi Afrika e. Mwakani ita Sudani kepi we. Lapa ita Sudani sei kepi we. Nina kulu akwa.
We've been listening to Lomareka with the song Sudan. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Lunasiwa.